We are reading from 6th Canto, Chapter 4. This chapter is entitled the Hamsa Guhya Prayers, Text 18. 6th Canto is one of those cantos which explains the cardinal principles of sadhana bhakti, beginning from the episode of Ajamil, wherein we find the power of Maya and the power of chanting of the holy names of Krishna. And as we go on in this canto, we have episodes which gives us word of caution, and also there are episodes which inspire us with their wonderful exemplary behavior. We have Ajamil and Chitraketu Maharaj, and these episodes, they caution us, warn us, what is the power of Maya. And we have the wonderful pastime of Vritrasura, in which we can see how much implicit faith Vritrasura had in the Supreme Lord. And it is one of those pastimes which exemplifies the Srimad Bhagavatam as being the Amala Puran. How Vritrasura didn't want anything else except the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So, 6th canto is a very, very important canto for we all sadhakas to learn from. Herein we have these Hamsa Guhya prayers offered by Daksha Prajapati. In fact, this particular verse has just a two-line purport. And since we arrived last night, so please excuse me if I am not very coherent in what I speak this morning. Herein, Shukdev Goswami is explaining. He is saying to Parikshit Maharaj to kindly hear with great attention. He says, Tan mama vahita shrunu. With great attention, kindly hear. How Prajapati Daksha, he begot so many children. Now definitely, Maharaj Parikshit, who has come over there, the sole purpose is to hear Bhagavad Katha. And generally we understand Bhagavad Katha means the pastimes of the Supreme Bhagavat, Lord Sri Krishna. But over here, such details Shukadev Goswami is explaining to Parikshit Maharaj, and at this particular time when he has reached the 6th canto, he is expecting that Parikshit Maharaj will hear these episodes also very attentively. Now, Prajapati Daksha, he got that name Daksha. Prabhupada writes in one of the purports in this episode, he got that name Daksha because he was very expert in begetting children. And that's what his name signifies. Like Krishna signifies his name, so Daksha Prajapati also signifies what he was adept in. And we sometimes can't even imagine that in those bygone ages, people like Daksha could beget thousands and thousands of children. Daksha Prajapati begot not just those 11,000, but then so many daughters and so many other living entities as mentioned over here. So definitely, Daksha Prajapati is a very, very powerful personality, and being benedicted by the Supreme Lord, he is doing a good job on behalf of the Supreme Lord. Herein, in this particular verse, it is explained that he begot these children and living entities using his semen and his mind. Retasa manasa chaiva. So I was thinking that how would we connect in order to explain something in regards to what has been explained by Shukadeva Goswami. In the third canto also, Kapil Muni explains to his mother Devahuti that it's not just because of the physical elements that a living entity is born. It is not just because of the semen and the ovum mixing together that a living entity is born. It goes in the mind first. It's from the consciousness that a certain living entity gets transmitted through these physical elements and then takes shape. So, material approach and spiritual approach. We'd like to discuss how someone approaches materially, or how is the material approach and how is the spiritual approach. In material approach, there is initially the subtle elements which then goes into the gross. Whereas we sadhakas, or anyone who is approaching through the spiritual path, it is the opposite. From the gross, we go to the subtle. So the material approach is from subtle, the gross things are formed. Like in material creation also, it begins with sound in the ether. And then we have these five elements. Ether, then subtle to ether is air. And then we find that there is sound in air as well as there is touch. So it becomes a little more gross. Then further on, there is fire, which has one more thing added on, which is form. So there is sound, there is touch, there is form. Then there is water, which is more grosser, and then it has more elements, more features in it. It has taste also then, along with the other three. And then we have earth element, which is the grossest, and it has smell, which is the added feature along with the others also. So we see the material creation begins with the most subtlest of all elements. And then when it takes form and shape, it becomes gross. Also, I guess in the Christian theology, they have this concept. Initially, it was the word God, and it was with him. Am I right? So from there, let there be creation, Lord said, let there be creation. So from the sound vibration, the creation began. So sound vibration is very subtle. And also we see within this material world, how anything which has to be created, it begins with something very subtle. If somebody has to create a house, so first there is sound vibration. He discusses about that. He discusses with the architect or with the civil engineer that I want a house like this, at this place. So there is interaction, which is on a very subtle level. But then that particular interaction is put in paper, and then the physical elements, the ingredients are brought, and then it turns into such gross thing that a physical structure comes up. So material approach is that from subtle to gross. Now, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that we are all suffering in this material world because we had that subtle desire initially. Ichha dvesha sama utthena dvandva mohena bharata. It was that one curiosity, that desire which we had, that we wanted to enjoy separate from Krishna. That resulted into something gross, dvesha. That resulted into dvandva, duality. And then some more, and so many things which now we experience, that it is so difficult to come out of even the gross things. And it all began with the subtle desire, the ichha. And also in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains the fall down of the living entity, which begins with the subtle dhyana. Dhyayato vishayan pumsam sangasteshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodod vijayate. He explains how when contemplation is there on the sense object and no one knows, it's like we are sitting over here and if we start contemplating on some sense object, nobody will come to know what's happening. But Krishna explains, it is so subtle that sometimes we also do not even know that how we get into contemplation of a certain sense object, and that results in sangha, that results in attachment. That attachment further becomes little more gross and turns into kama, turns into lust. And when that lust is not satisfied, it takes the form of krodha. Krodot bhavati sammoha. And that krodha then puts us into sammoha. Sammoha means illusion. Not just ordinary illusion, but some very special kind of mahamaya. What, you know, it's not just maya, it's mahamaya. So sammoha, and then that sammoha results in smriti vibhrama. We lose our discrimination power, the memory. Then that results in buddhi nasha, and buddhi nasha pranashyati. So Krishna, he gives a sequence of how the fall down of a living entity begins with something so subtle, contemplation. And in this very sixth canto, we have the example of Ajamil. That how Ajamil's fall down took place was from something very subtle. He just saw with his eyes that particular scene. And he started contemplating on that. And if it would have given up at that particular time, he could have saved of all that trouble which he had to undergo later on. So then he got into sinful activities, committing sin. He married that prostitute. It's something which is unheard of even in Kali Yuga nowadays. You don't find people marrying prostitutes in Kali Yuga. But Ajamil, he fell to that extent. And it all began from that subtle desire which he had after he saw that particular scene. And from there on, his gross, materialistic, sinful life began. And it went to such an extent that he had to see those Yamadutas, three Yamadutas coming to take his soul, to punish him in the hellish planets severely. So it's so instructive that what we use these eyes for, if these eyes are not used properly and authentically, then these eyes will have to see something like Yamadutas and maybe something more severe than that. But it was only at that point of time when he chanted Narayan that he was saved from those gross hellish punishments. So Ajamil's case is another episode wherein we see how the fall down took place from something subtle and then went into something so gross. We also have Saubari Muni's example. Saubari Muni, you know, he saw just some fishes. As far as Ajamil, at least Ajamil saw some human beings. But Saubari Muni, it was so subtle that he saw some fishes, and what could you make out? If some fishes are coming together to enjoy sex life, you can't even make out what's happening. Now Saubari Muni, and he was under Jamuna in Brajamandal. Can you imagine what could be more sacred place than that? He was under the Jamuna waters in Brajamandal and doing his sacred yogic practices. And then he saw just two fishes coming, copulating. And that subtle desire arose. And then slowly he had to come out of that particular situation and look for again, gross things, look for that particular enjoyment. So from that subtle one desire of Saubhari Muni which he had, resulted in that got married to 50 daughters of that king, King Mandhata. And then, he had to create so many mansions and facilities for them. That's what Rishabhdev explains in the fifth canto also. Pumsa striya mithuni bhava metam tayor mitho ridhaya granti mahur ata griha kshetra suta apta vittai. It begins with that man and woman, when they come together with a desire to enjoy sex life, then it results in granti. Then it results in griha kshetra suta apta vittai. It begins with something so subtle, just a desire. But then the gross things have to be manifested. It has to come out. So we see our coming into this material world also, as Krishna explains, that we are subtle part and parcels of Krishna. Mamaivamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, as Krishna says. We are eternally his part and parcels. But then when we come in this material world with this mind which is so subtle, and then when the mind wants to use the senses which are gross, so this combination of subtle and gross, karshati, results in karshati. Srila Prabhupada was once giving a Hindi lecture, and he quoted this verse, prakriti sthani karshati. And he said, jeev kushti lad raha hai. In Hindi, kushti means wrestling. So it's, it sounds the same, karshati and kushti. So Prabhupada said, jeev kushti lad raha hai maya se. The living entity is like in a tug of war or a wrestling match with this material energy, struggling. I was just seeing the schedule outside, and I noticed today is 1st May. It's the World Labor Day. Is it celebrated all over here also? In fact, most parts of the world, today is the day which is celebrated in commemoration for all the laborers and workers. Therefore, it is called the World Labor Day. Very significant. In fact, every day could be the World Labor Day, because every day we have to labor so hard. In fact, it begins with the labor pain. We all were begotten, with that labor pain. And we die with all through our life. It's all the beast of burden, the labor which we have to do in order to just enjoy our senses. And then we die of so much of labor, and then again take birth with all that labor from the previous life, and then from that life. So it's not just 1st of May, which is today the World Labor Day, but it's every day the World Labor Day. And also it's called, I was serving the armed forces, Indian armed forces, we were told that today is also the day which is called the May Day. And you know the phrase, May Day, what May Day means. It's the emergency in the flight navigation and the sea navigation. It's called, when the emergency, it's called the May Day, May Day. So it's very significant what Krishna explains. Dukhalayam ashashvatam. 1st May could be signified as Dukhalayam is the labor day, and ashashvatam, emergency, means the May Day. So today, in one sense, it might not be in our Vaishnava calendar what 1st May would signify, but we can draw lessons from this phrase May Day and the Labor Day. Prakriti sthani karshati, as Krishna explains, that we are laboring hard in this material world because of the subtle mind and the gross senses. So the mind, as Krishna says, is the element, the entity which carries the body and gives shapes to the body. As herein it is explained that Daksha Prajapati, he begot all of these living entities and children, not just through the semen, but through his mind more. And Krishna explains, just like air carries the fragrance, similarly the subtle body, it carries the impressions, and then we take on, the transmigration takes place. So body is the precipitate of the mind which we have. So it is the subtle where we have to go to find out. The gross existence which we have depends on what is there in the mind. So mind is like the software, and this body is like the hardware. So the software is more important, and therefore when we see that people, they function in a certain way, their physical bodies, their senses function in a certain way, it has to go back into their subtle body. And therefore, we see the spiritual approaches, it's the opposite. The spiritual approach is that from gross, you go back to the subtle, subtle, more subtler, subtlest, and realize the soul, realize the Bhagavan feature, which is the subtlest. Now, if we take examples for the spiritual approach, which is from gross to subtle, we find how in the Bhagavad Gita also, when Krishna begins to explain to Arjun, he begins with body and soul, and you know how it's just a bunch of chemicals. And Arjun was in the gross bodily concept of life at that particular point of time. And beginning from that particular knowledge, Krishna is refining the message of Bhagavad Gita. And it's becoming more and more subtle as Sarva Dharman Parityajya is reached, wherein, you know, it's going so beyond any of the dharmas that the culmination of Bhagavad Gita comes to the most subtle aspect of spirituality, which is complete surrender. Also, we have Nectar of Instruction. Nectar of Instruction also begins from Vacho Vegam. Again, it's about the body and about the senses and how we have to control all of that. And it culminates in living in Radha Kund and surrendering one's life. So if somebody who would not know that how the Nectar of Instruction has begun, Rupa Goswami is taking us on a journey of progression from Vacho Vegam, taking just 11 verses, what eloquence, just 11 verses from Vacho Vegam, he's taking us to Radha Kund, the highest place in the universe. And if you look into the spiritual process is a process wherein we have to let go of the gross activities. Like the four regulative principles are on such gross, on a gross level. And then we go subtler and we realize that chanting is not just sitting with the mala, but chanting means we have to follow against the, 10 offenses. And then we go subtler into understanding our spiritual path. Like in Ashtanga Yoga also, it begins with Yama Niyam, which is very gross. Then asana, then pranayama, pratyahar, goes subtler now. Then dharana, then dhyana, and the subtlest is samadhi. So even in Ashtanga Yoga, it begins with something which is very gross, the physical actions which the yogi has to do, and then it has to culminate into something so subtle that one has to be absorbed in samadhi. And in our chanting also, it is explained by Vishwanath Chakra Thakur in Madhuri Kandamani that when we are sitting for chanting, in our chanting also, although it begins with we emanating the sound vibration, the sound vibration coming out from our mouth, but in that sound vibration, although it might appear to be gross, but there has to be the consciousness which is subtle. So Vishwanath Chakra Thakur explains in Madhurya Kandambani that when we are chanting, we have our karmendriyas and our gyanendriyas working together simultaneously. Now karmendriyas are gross, whereas gyanendriyas, they are subtle because they are knowledge acquiring senses. So let us see, which are the karmendriyas which work when we are chanting? Yes, the hands, the fingers, the finger. We are fingering the beads. And sometimes fingering the beads, we become more cautious, more conscious about the fingering of our beads and, you know, looking for the head bead. And, you know, as we are nearing the head bead, that's the ecstasy which we feel. So, you know, in our chanting, this is one karmendriya which we are using. The hands, the fingers. What is the other karmendriya which we are using? The mouth. The mouth which we are using, that's another karmendriya. So, these are the two karmendriyas which are used when we are chanting. Now, yeah. Huh? Okay, legs. But that is something which it doesn't have to directly do with your chanting. With your chanting means, you know, that's what Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur explains. It has to do with fingering of the beads, which means you are touching Tulsi. Now that touch of Tulsi, that's the Gyanendriya, he explains. Because yes, the hand is a Karmendriya, but over the hand is the skin. And what is the skin? Skin is a Gyanendriya. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur explained also that when we are touching our Tulsi Mala, our consciousness should be that we have been given this opportunity to touch the Tulsi at the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He explained that that should be the consciousness as we are touching the Tulsi beads. So over here, the Gyanendriya has to be consciously used. So this is one Gyanendriya, the skin over the hands. And then we have the tongue, which is another Gyanendriya, which is supposed to relish, taste the holy name. So yes, the tongue is emanating the sound vibration, but it has to also simultaneously taste the holy name. So two things the tongue is doing. It is working as a Karmendriya, also it is working as a Gyanendriya. Supposed to work as a Gyanendriya, it is supposed to taste the holy name also. And then the third Gyanendriya, Chakra Pratipad explains, which is the ears. That our ears are also, there's this Gyanendriya which is supposed to hear the holy name. So herein, he says that of the Karmendriyas and of the Gyanendriyas, the Gyanendriyas are more in number than the Karmendriyas while we are chanting Hare Krishna. So which means the focus should be more on the Gyanendriya, which is more subtle. So from the gross physical act of chanting, one has to enter into the subtle realm of conscious chanting, he says. So as the hands and the mouth, the Karmendriyas are working, we have to go more subtler into being conscious of the Gyanendriya. So what is the spiritual approach? The spiritual approach is from gross to subtle. The material approach is from subtle to gross things. And we have the graphic example of Dhruva Maharaj in the fourth canto, how Dhruva Maharaj, he performed his austerities, and if you look into his austerities, every month it was becoming subtler and subtler and subtler. The first month, every 3 days Dhruva Maharaj, he took some fruits and berries. Then the second month, it became still subtler. The second month Dhruva Maharaj, every 6 days he would take only some dry leaves. He gave up the fruits also and the berries also. The second month, every 6 days he would take only some dry leaves. And then the third month, every 9th day, he would just drink some water. Now, going more subtler in his austerities. And sounds far out. Then 4th month, Dhruva Maharaj, every 12th day, he would just breathe some air. And in the 5th month, he even gave up that. And then we find just in 6 months, Dhruva Maharaj, from his austerities, which were, you know, much on a substantial, tangible, gross level, then he made it into more subtler, and then fully absorbed in the thoughts of the Supreme Lord, that the Supreme Lord just gave his darshan in 6 months to Dhruva Maharaj. So we have Dhruva Maharaj's sadhana bhakti, whereas we find this principle of from gross to subtle. And that's what our sadhana bhakti has to also bring about in us. Srila Prabhupada named International Society for Krishna consciousness. Again, consciousness is the subtle. Yes, of course, we perform deity worship. We do those physical acts using our senses. But even in that, it is the consciousness. In deity worship, it is the consciousness. As Krishna says, patram pushpam phalam toyam. Again, that verse, if you see, it talks about the gross things. A leaf, a fruit, you know, some water. But then Krishna says, bhakti. Two times he uses the word bhakti. So Krishna also explains that, yes, you have to use those gross things, but unless the subtle bhakti is there, I won't accept. So in our Krishna consciousness, what we learn, or what I could draw out from this one verse and just two line purport, was that how Daksha Prajapati is not just begetting all those living entity and children through the semen, but through his mind. So similarly, when we have to undo our materialistic conditioning over here, we have to also go from the gross to the subtle. As we have come from subtle to the gross, we have to decondition ourselves, that we have to go from gross to the subtle and be conscious of Krishna and return to that supreme, refined, subtlest abode, Golok Vrindavan. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.